Good morning, happy Sunday, and welcome to On the Weekend Edition. I am your host, Brian Pettaway, and I am so thankful that you're here with me this morning for this hour. It is also Super Bowl Sunday, and we will get to that with the Patty later on during the show. But, you know, you ever have a perception of someone based on what you've heard, more than based on contact that you've had with a person? For example, you start a job, a new job. People tell you, look out for that person because that person's that, and the other. Now, you have not yet met this person. You've seen this person around, but you have not yet met them. But already you have an opinion about them based on what you've heard. And what I've realized, oftentimes, the people that they are speaking about, they haven't spent much time with these people either, getting to know them. Their opinions of this person that they speak of is based on what they've heard also. Now, listen, there's usually some truth in most rumors. Some truth. And the percentage of truth, well, it varies based on the rumor, obviously. And today, my special guest is someone that has had so many things said about him. Now, being in Baltimore, you either hear his name and you love him, or you hate him. And oftentimes, it was based on things that you had heard or read about this particular person that were either true or false. Now, there were a lot of things that were put out there that were absolutely false about this guy. And I'm going to sit down with him, pick his brain a little bit, hear some things from the man himself, and see if your opinions change about Dr. and Pastor Jamal Bryant. And as I mentioned earlier, it is Super Bowl Sunday, which means it is the most exciting day of the year for the Petty. I'm going to try and get him on the line today to see if he can tell us who he predicts to be the winner and why, and talk to us about the upcoming seasons of the XFL and the USFL. He's going to cover those as well. And of course, you've got me. I'm going to give you and start off the show with current events from the past week. So I'm feeling great on the Super Bowl Sunday. I hope that you're feeling great. I've got lots to talk about, so let's get right to it. You know, each week I do news on this show, and each week I pray and I hope that this week's news will be better than the previous week's. And it seems like there's a pattern of me talking about the mayor, Brandon Scott. And I don't want to dog this guy. Like, I don't want to keep mentioning his failures or failures of the city that I think should have been and certainly could have been corrected long ago that he is not taking responsibility for. It's almost like the mayor's position in the city has become a money grab for the last, I don't know, two decades. It just seems like people take the position of mayor in this city. They do the bare minimum and then they leave office either wealthier than when they came in or in a couple of cases with a criminal record. But meanwhile, the city is going to hell in a handbasket, and nobody really seems to care. At least nobody in a position that could change the situation. And what's got me riled up this morning is that according to new state test results known as Maryland Comprehensive Assessment Programs, at least 23 schools, 23 in this city, including elementary, middle, and high schools, have zero students proficient in math. How the hell is that even possible? I don't understand. Just this past July, Brandon Scott showed up at an award ceremony for Dr. Sonia Santelices, the CEO of Baltimore City Public Schools. And during an active grade-changing scandal, where over 12,000 failing grades have been changed to passing, and during an attendance scandal, where the kids in Baltimore City schools who had not attended the school at all during the school year had been marked present, and at a time when the governor had called this scandal criminal, the mayor, Brandon Scott, said this about his CEO of schools.
I commend you for your continuing commitment to the education and development of our young people.
It left many people, including yours truly, scratching their heads because Sonia Santelices has been the CEO of Baltimore Public Schools for 6 years. And during her tenure, graduation rates are down, college enrollment is down, attendance is way down, and kindergarten readiness is down. Her school system is among the lowest performing in the country. Yet, she is the highest paid school district leader in the state, earning $445,000 a year in total compensation. Now, so far, the mayor himself hasn't spoken a word about these test scores, and his office has not put out a prepared statement. Absolutely nothing. It's crickets. And it bothers me because everyone knows that where there's a lack of education, there is a rise in criminal activity. We cannot afford any more criminal activity out of our young people in this city. So I'm hoping that these new test scores shines a light on how absolutely positively dismal the performances have been of Mayor Scott and Sonia Santelices in getting the school system in Baltimore City up and running, because there's no way possible that 23 public schools from high school to elementary school should have students with zero proficiency in math. That means that none of these students in 23 schools are able to perform mathematics at grade level. I mean, it's so bad that even Benjamin Crump has filed a lawsuit against the Baltimore City Public School System on behalf of parents, saying that these tax-paying parents who are sending their kids to these Baltimore City Public Schools are not getting their money's worth. Essentially, that the school system is stealing from these parents and denying these children a proper education at the same time. So now that Benjamin Crump is involved, it's a national story and embarrassment for not just the city, but the state. And I'm dying to see if Wes Moore is going to get involved and what he's going to do to help Brandon Scott, because Brandon Scott is clearly needs serious help in this situation. Also in the news, there was a manhunt that extended 3 days in Baltimore County this week. And it baffles me how this happened, and I'll tell you why. But a man called police saying that his son was suicidal. The police come to his house thinking that it was a non-life-threatening situation for them, and was just in the mindset of trying to save this young man's life, trying to talk him off the ledge, so to speak. Well, when the officer came into the home and was directed downstairs to the basement where the young man lived, he noticed that the guy, 24-year-old David Linthicum, was holding an assault rifle and then fired 15 shots at this cop who raced back up the stairs but was injured in trying to get away from these gunshots. At that point, Linthicum slipped out of the house past the police, and it started what was a 3-day manhunt. The manhunt and car chase at times stretched from Cockeysville to Harford County, causing authorities to close 2 counties, 6 schools, and ordering families to stay in their homes behind locked doors. Now, during that 3-day stint, Linthicum carjacked a detective and shot him multiple times. That officer is still fighting for his life. He had already shot the initial officer, and he led police on a car chase with the detective's vehicle that he carjacked and shot. Eventually, they were able to disable the car, the police were, and Linthicum then ran into the woods, where he stayed for an additional 2 days while cops tried to negotiate a surrender. The police used smoke, they used flashbang grenades, they had helicopters and drones to pinpoint his exact location, and they found it. But they didn't rush him. Now, he didn't have any hostages, but for some reason, it took them a long time to decide to go in and just get him. And the reason was because he was armed. But they eventually did go in and get him. He did resist arrest, but they were able to apprehend and cuff him without, get this, anyone getting hurt. So 24-year-old David Linthicum is now in police custody, and he's charged with 2 counts of attempted first-degree murder, 2 counts of first-degree assault, and 2 weapons offenses in connection with the Wednesday shooting of the initial police officer responding to his Cockeysville home to help him. And he's also charged with attempted first-degree murder, first-degree assault, armed carjacking, unlawful taking of a vehicle, and a weapons charge in connection with the shooting of the detective whose car he stole and shot multiple times. Okay, so this is what baffles me, getting back to my first statement of the story. You have a 24-year-old white male with an assault rifle who shoots and wounds 2 police officers, carjacks one of the police officers that he shot, and that officer is actually on life support fighting for his life. He goes into the woods, and you're able to go in after 2 days of negotiation, rush him, handcuff him, and he is completely unharmed, unscathed. How is that possible? When a black man, a man that looks like me, gets pulled over for a traffic stop, no weapons, and I'm dead 15 seconds later. How's that possible? This is the white privilege that black folks talk about. I mean, kudos to Baltimore County Police and Maryland State Police for doing their job, but it's evidence that you can do your job when you want to. You don't always fear for your life, even when people have shot you. You know what I mean? Why can't you give that same benefit of doubt, have that same patience and compassion for people of color? Had this been a 24-year-old black man, we all know the first time he shot or raised a weapon at that officer, they would have shot up that whole house, his parents in it and all. He never would have made it outside of that house. Also, something odd is going on, because ABC News is reporting that an unidentified object was shot down 10 miles off the frozen coast of Alaska on Friday afternoon. Now, details are sketchy from the Pentagon, and they are not telling us what this object was, but it marked the second time U.S. jets had taken down an object in less than a week, following the shooting down of that suspected Chinese spy balloon off the coast of South Carolina last Saturday. Now, the object, which officials have not characterized as a balloon, was shot down at 1:45 Eastern Standard Time, according to the Pentagon. spokesperson for the Pentagon, Brigadier General Patrick Ryder, says that they are still unclear about what the object is or where it came from. He says it's about the size of a small car and not similar in size or shape to the Chinese surveillance balloon that was, you know, downed off the coast of South Carolina. He says we're calling it an object because that's the best description we have right now. We don't know who owns it, whether it's state-owned or corporate-owned or privately owned. They just don't know. Now, I think it's safe to say that this is a Chinese craft. Most people believe that this is a Chinese craft that was just shot down again. And it's getting pretty tense. You know, what's been quietly kept under wraps over the years is that the Chinese own about 400,000 acres of American soil, from farmland to land in the inner cities of New York and Chicago. There is a lot of Chinese real estate that's owned right here in Baltimore. And what's interesting about this timing is that recently, the governors of Texas and Florida and Arkansas and several other states are weighing legislation that would bar Chinese citizens from buying real estate. The Chinese Foreign Ministry said on Friday, in response to that proposed legislative ban, that the United States is violating the principles of market economy and international trade rules. But I think that legislation is going to be put through anyway, because I think what's happened with this spy balloon, it's finally become the realization of those in Congress, in particular the GOP, that Chinese investors are gobbling up U.S. real estate at a frightening rate. They've almost got a 500,000 acres of American soil under their control. So we'll see what happens. It's going to definitely be interesting. All right, speaking of interesting, let's shift gears. I've got a guest today who, if you're in Baltimore, more than likely you know his name, you know of him, you've heard or you've seen him in some capacity in this city when he was here. If you're listening and you're not from Baltimore, he's also on a national stage, and you've probably seen him on the news somewhere. He's been pastoring for almost 3 decades now, and during that time, he's had tremendous success, and he's had some failures on the personal level that have been chronicled in public. So there's a lot to talk about when we talk about Dr. and Pastor Jamal Bryant. What a lot of people don't know is Jamal did not graduate high school. He got his GED, but he got his GED, and then he went to Morehouse, where he earned an undergraduate degree in political science and international studies. He then obtained a Master's of Divinity degree from Duke University, and then he received a Doctorate of Ministry from the Graduate Theological Foundation. Now, his rise to pastoral superstardom has been filled with scandal and controversy, failures and successes. All of those are chronicled, and most he's been very forthright about. The divorce, the infidelities, the multiple children, all of those things he's talked about, and he's written about. And it's, you know, it's old news, so it wasn't worth me talking about. But what I did want to talk to him about is some of the things that he says that are now generating controversies within the church. Things like this.
But for your marriage, that you are so spiritual that you don't know how to be sexual. I know you love God. I know you feel with the Holy Ghost. But at night, your husband does not want to hear James Cleveland or James Fortune. The Bible says that the bedroom, I'm talking to married people. God is giving you permission to get it in. Try whatever. Some of you are losing your spouses. You're losing your spouses while you love God because you keep coming to the bedroom looking like Quaker Oats. Be a saint in the sanctuary and be a porn star at home.
New birth and me are pro-choice because Jesus is. He said, behold, I stand at the door and knock. If you decide to let me in, that's pro-choice. I'm at the people who don't go to church. And a lot of churches are just recycling people from other churches. That's not who I'm after. I'm looking for people that smell like weed. New Birth is the largest land-owning black church in America. And so my position to my deacons is, why aren't we not raising cannabis? I'll be able to bring in black males. They're able to do it legally. Mm-hmm. Teaching them farming. God. I'm helping them to enhance the ecosystem. This is the kind of conversation. So if the guy, black boy in Bankhead said, they growing weed at the church? Where do I join? I don't need no pamphlet for him.
Right.
He coming in.
Now, clearly, these are not conventional things that are said in the church or about the church. But Jamal is not a conventional pastor. And I just thought that I would sit down with him today and just pick his brain a little bit and find out exactly where he is and his thinking, how he got there, and where he intends to go from this point. So without further ado, please help me welcome Pastor Dr. Jamal Bryant. So Dr. Bryant, thanks for coming on today. I really appreciate you coming on to the show.
No, it's an honor.
How are you feeling this morning?
Man, wonderfully well.
Awesome, awesome. So listen, I want to jump right into it because you've done so much in your career. I don't have all the time in the world with you today, and that's how long it would take me to go through all of them that you've done. But you know, I've been calling you Baltimore's native son, but you were actually born in Boston, right?
Yes. Yeah.
When did you come to Baltimore?
Oh, yeah, so those years don't even count. I got to Baltimore in kindergarten.
Oh, yeah, you're right. You're right, they don't count. Now, I know that you were raised in a preaching household. Your Bishop Brian is a well-known and well-respected and revered pastor. But did that give you the bug? Because I thought you wanted to be an activist, I heard.
Oh, yeah, no, I was running from that bug. That was a lightning bug. Not just my dad, but my grandfather as well. And so I never saw myself going into the pastorate. I thought I would land my anchor working for the NAACP.
Uh-huh. Now, did you know people in the NAACP at that point before you got involved?
I worked there. I was a national youth director for 6 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So then what got you into...
Kwasi Mfume hired me and made me his youth director.
Wow. Kwasi Mfume and my grandfather were good friends in the Masons. So they were in the same lodge. Yeah, yeah. It's a small world. So what got you into the church? What got you into the pastoring thing?
I really felt the call of God that there was more for my life than just activism. And so I thought ministry was a way that I could fuse it together.
Okay. So I know you've done incredibly well and successful at it, but if you had to do it all over again, would you take the same route?
The exact same route. I think it's made me a better pastor because it's given me a larger worldview and helped me sharpen the skills of community organizing that I think is necessary to pastor a church in this season.
Okay. Now, look, Jamal, when you were pastoring at the Empowerment Temple, you grew a church of thousands of people, thousands of members, and you're doing the same thing down at the at New Birth Missionary Baptist Church. It's right outside of Atlanta, correct?
Yes. So, it's in Stonecrest, Georgia. Okay. It's about 25 minutes outside of the city.
What's the secret sauce? What's the secret to your success as far as growing these churches the way that you have?
I think really getting beyond the four walls, moving from the steeple to the street corner,
okay.
Showing people you legitimately care. It is amazing that 93% of Jesus's ministry was outside of the church, and today most ministries stay in the church. And when people see you come outside, they feel more drawn to come inside.
Yeah, I heard you say once, which I thought was a great statement, especially from a pastor, you can't be a true shepherd if you don't smell like the sheep.
That's right.
I can roll with that one. I can roll with that. The question I have, too, is that you're very good at bringing the young people in while keeping the seniors in the same place. That's right. A multi-generational skill. And where did you acquire that skill? Because it's hard to keep older people in the church when you bring in youth in at the same time.
Yeah, I think that you got to have a Piccadilly horn and horn smorgasbord. There's just something on the plate for everybody. So, you know, I'm going to do hymns and praise and worship.
Okay.
And most churches try to pick one. And so I think we endeavor to be well-rounded.
So what is the most difficult part? You had to assimilate, I guess. You had to go different from the AME to the Baptist role. What was the biggest difference? What was the biggest change for you?
I don't know if you got enough time in this show, but one was in Baltimore, I was the founder. In Atlanta, I'm a successor.
Okay.
Yeah. Two is, in Atlanta is the very first time I ever had to say to one of my members, yes, ma'am. Because the young people in Baltimore and had older people. In Baltimore, I had more beneficiaries. In Atlanta, I had more benefactors.
Okay.
In Baltimore, I had employees. In Atlanta, I got entrepreneurs. So all of the stuff, I had to do a real overhaul in mindset so that I wouldn't try to retrofit what I did in Baltimore in Atlanta. So Baltimore was in Park Heights, and in Atlanta, I'm right on the cusp of the suburbs.
Okay.
So it takes a completely different approach.
Now, do you approach the people, well, you don't approach people differently in a Christian sense, but in a money sense, I mean, there is a difference in the money sense. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And so how is that difference for you?
It is different in so much as I have to identify the need,
okay,
not remind people of the need.
Got you.
We, in the middle of the pandemic, fed 1 million families with groceries that came from the larger Atlanta Metroplex, where prior I had to give our food primarily to my members.
Okay. Yeah. Right.
Yeah,
right.
So I'm reminding people in Atlanta of what is our responsibility to the larger community. In Baltimore, we were the community.
Got you. Everyone saw, because CNN covered it a lot, the line that stretched from your church, it seemed like forever during the pandemic.
Yes.
It seemed
yes.
like you were able to get vaccines and give shots when nobody else was able to even get the medicine. And I got to be honest, I always wondered how you were able to do that. Like, what? I don't want you to tell me you connect, so to speak, but but how were you able to do something like that?
I think, again, because we had built trust by giving out food. You know, so imagine you walking down the streets of Baltimore, D.C., and somebody come over here and come in the alley and get a shot. Nah, no, thank you. if somebody you have built relationship with and you know that they've been feeding your family and taking care of your children and been there for your seniors, then it gives us a greater level of currency in which to work with.
Right. Well, you guys did a great job with that. I mean, it was very impressive to everybody. I think people are still talking about it, to be honest with you. Now, there are successful people, Jamal, in the spotlight. You know, they're never criticized about their successes. But some like yourself, you know, you've seen your share of criticism. How do you handle the controversial comments that come to you? Like, how do you handle that and just keep moving on?
Yeah, you have to understand that the average pastor of a mega church is 63.
Okay.
And so they are beyond the grasp of social media consumption. I have been in the public spotlight since I was 27. So all of the ebbs and flows of my life are public fodder, where most people who are in my position emerged before people had an Instagram account.
Got you. So, and they had already lived that life. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So the realm of people that I could call that would identify with that struggle would be very slim.
Hey, that's a good point. You know, you wrote a book, I think it was in 2010. It's called World War Me and How to Win the War I Lost. Yep. In that book, you had a passage, well, a message, and you said that one of your mentors, you didn't name him, but you said that he told you the only thing that you have in life are two things, and it's your image and your integrity. And you said that you digested one and discarded the other. I think that's what you said.
Yes. No, you got it.
Okay. So
that was Bishop Ingram, who was a retired AME bishop, said that to me. That, and I used a lot of my currency around fortifying image without developing integrity. John Maxwell wrote a book called Talent Is Not Enough.
Right.
And it really talks about how people, particularly in church, fawn over the talented without investing in their character. You know, the old adage is people who say money won't change them never had any. So if you know, 30 years old driving a Bentley, it is the same as you just giving a basketball player money who hadn't had the grounding or the internal fortitude to be able to handle that.
Right. So when you were living that lifestyle and you saw the criticism, is that something that helped shape your character, I guess? So did it help straighten you out? Did you feel that?
It was a wake-up call because sometimes in crisis is when you discover your value.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It's easy for, I don't know, somebody who knew you in college, somebody who used to work with you, somebody who lived three doors down to say, hey, I got an issue with this guy.
Right.
It's altogether different for somebody to say they hate you and they've never met you.
Never met you. Right. Very true, brother. That's very, very true.
Yeah, so that's a greater a weight of responsibility. African proverb says, heavy is the head that wears the crown.
Right.
So it really helped me to illumine that I wasn't just a local pastor. You know, people don't know what it's like for you to be trending for something negative, and the positive stuff don't even get a post.
Right.
And you have to reevaluate, what am I doing it for? Are you doing it for the gram? Are you doing it because that's what you feel like your calling is?
One of the other things you said is that you are an ambassador to the unbeliever, right?
Yes.
Explain that to me. I know what it means, but explain it to my listeners.
Yeah, I got healed of something very quick. I am pastoring the church that has the largest land-owning black church in America.
Okay.
And I proffered that the black church has been adversely hit with black men in the prison pipeline flushed because of possession, intention to distribute. I said, now that we're dealing with the legalization of cannabis, why wouldn't the black church be at the fore of that conversation, that dialogue, and that discussion, that we can show black men a legal way in which to enrich themselves, not through recreational use, but hemp and the medicinal properties. People in the street loved it. The people in the sanctuary said, crucify him. So it depends on whether you was listening to a Christian blog or an FM radio station, you was hearing Jamal Bryant's name. But the commentary attached to it was distinctively different.
It was good.
It dawned on me that Jesus was never affirmed by the church.
Okay.
It was the church that wanted him dead. And so many times we keep looking for people to affirm us when we are called to be disruptive. And so I still stand by it. I'm still amazed that church people are offended that I said, I want people who smell like weed.
Yeah, that was the soundbite. That was the soundbite that everybody heard. They didn't necessarily hear the explanation behind it. You had to dig for the explanation behind it. What most people heard was, is Jamal Bryant is looking for men that smell like weed. And so I wanted you to explain that, because a lot of people did not hear the explanation behind it. And
the church's responsibility is to get people who smell like alcohol and transform them.
Right.
To get people who are in the streets and show them a better life. And what the modern day church has done is just recycled people from different churches without reaching for people who are not in church at all.
Okay. Now, you were successful here in Baltimore. So what was the reason? Why did you leave? I mean, you were successful here. You had a great following here.
Yeah.
What took you down south?
Yeah, I felt like I had peaked where it is that I was. When I started in Palmer Temple in 2000, the population in Baltimore was 1.1 million. When I left December of 2018, the population of Baltimore was 600,000. The room for growth was not where it was. And you got to remember, I started this church at 28 years old. I'm now 51. And it is only in the church where it is punitive if you decide that you're going to do something different.
Right.
You got on the radio today and announced, hey, guys, this has been great. I got an opportunity to go to satellite radio. The whole world would send you congratulations. In the church world is, how dare you think of making a move when the irony is they want your pastor to preach that new doors will open for you. They want their pastor to say that new opportunities are coming your way, that God will do something different. But for the pastor, you better stay here until we put you in a wicker chair with a massage. Thanks for the good times.
I got you.
And I just knew that my time was up, but I didn't know, because I had no model for how do you leave something you started.
Yeah, it's got to be a difficult thing. I mean, that's your baby. How do you leave your baby behind? You know what I mean?
Yeah, and my father gave me something that quickly healed me. He said to me, Jamal, I think you got confused. This is not your church. This is God's church.
Okay.
And if it's God's church, then you can't take ownership. And that freed me a lot.
So to those people that were following you, and who still, I'm sure, follow you, but you're not here physically, what do you say to them? I mean, do you know what I'm saying? Do you have?
Yeah, I say to them, I apologize because what that means is I wedded you more to me than I did to Christ.
Okay.
And that is not the position I should have you in. At the end of the day, it shouldn't be your commitment to Jamal. But as a pastor, I'm to always point you to God. And so to be more committed, because I've got people who now that I'm not there, don't go to church at all.
Right. Right.
Forget going to another church. They're not going nowhere.
Right.
I think that I should have done more in building disciples than building followers.
Followers. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, you were at, speaking of that, you were at Bethel AME about 3 months ago, back in November, as a guest speaker, a guest pastor,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And the buzz was at the time, like I told you earlier, that Jamal Bryan's coming back to Baltimore, but not understanding that it was in a kind of in a guest speaking kind of role.
Right.
When you know, when Tom Brady, I'm just going to give you a sports analogy because you know sports. When Tom Brady left the Patriots and went to Tampa Bay, his first game back in the old stadium after he'd been gone for about a year, he said that he was nervous for the very first time in his career. He actually was nervous playing in his old home stadium. Did you get those kind of butterflies when you came back to Bethel? Did you feel emotional at all?
No, I had those butterflies in April when I came back to preach at Empowerment.
Okay.
In Baltimore, at Bethel, I felt like a guest.
But
to get back to Empowerment Temple that I hadn't been to in 3 years, to sit in that chair and to see the building and the people, I was flush with emotion.
Really?
And it was overwhelming and humbling for me, way more so than going back to Bethel.
Was there any regret?
None. I just regretted, that's not true. I regretted that this church that I started and served for 18 years, that I only gave them a 2-week notice.
Okay.
And I felt like I owed them more than that. I owed myself more than that.
Was it just a situation where, you don't have to get deep into it, but was it a situation where it was an emergency that you go down there because the offer was contingent upon you being there sooner than later, or you just felt
they
like...
They were in crisis and needed me to come immediately.
Okay. Got you. Now, you know that New Birth has a reputation too. How did you overcome that? Did you give that any thought as to where you were going based on everything that had happened prior to you getting there?
We had to do a whole lot of rebranding and repositioning with the church.
Okay. And what's been the greatest difficulty since you've been there in attaining and maintaining the current accomplishments that you've had?
That this has been such a legendary church in the city, to really get them out of thinking on yesterday and start repositioning for the future.
Okay. I saw you at the Tyree Nichols funeral two weeks ago, with several other pastors. And I noticed that although you're a pastor, and I know that you have the activism bug still in you, right?
Yeah.
I see you oftentimes involved in things like that. We went down to Brunswick, Georgia for the Ahmaud Arbery situation. The violence that's occurring, especially towards black men, even black men on black men, what do you attribute that to, and how do you get involved in a role that helps stop that? Like, what are you doing for that?
Dr. King said that poverty is the bride of crime, that wherever you see crime, there's always poverty. And so most politicians, most civil rights groups, and most churches get wrong. They want to light candles. They want to hold up placards. But they're not developing any jobs.
Right.
And I think that part of our responsibility is answering that economic quotient of what do we do when we've got $13 trillion worth of spending power, but 87% of black people don't own a single stock.
Right.
So that education has got to come into place. I'm getting on this interview after coming out of a meeting on how New Birth can be the largest teenage employer in Atlanta this summer, because the crime is going to rise, and there's got to be some economic conduits.
You know, it's very interesting and very ironic that you say that. Every week I get on my show, I do news before I do the interview, and I talk about the rise in crime, especially in violent crime with teens in this city here. And you being, as I say, a native son of this city,
yeah.
Now that we have a black governor and we have a black mayor, which can be a tremendous dynamic duo, have you given any thought to speaking to either one of them? I mean, I know you're in Atlanta now, but I mean, your home is here. You know what I'm saying? Have you given any thought, Jamal, to speaking to either one of them?
Both of them. I think one of the greatest civil rights leaders of our time that is undervalued and underapplauded is Maynard Jackson, who created more black millionaires than anybody in American history. That there could be no substantial contract for any development in Atlanta without somebody black at the table.
Okay.
And I think that both of them are going to have to really rev up an economic engine. Marion Barry, aside from all of his missteps, created the blueprint for what to do with summer employment, that all of the agencies in D.C. had to take on some young people. And I think that the two of them will be in a stronger place if they would follow those models.
Yeah, it's a crisis in this city, as it is in a lot of major cities, but it is a crisis in the city.
Right.
And I wondered if you followed what was going on here in Baltimore.
Oh, no, I read the Baltimore Sun online every day.
Do you really?
I do.
Okay. So you mentioned missteps. Because you've been in the spotlight, and as you said, from an early age, a lot of your missteps have been chronicled, some made up, some real. But when you're a young person and you're going through some of the things that young people go through, how do you keep yourself from falling prey to just the criticism and keep it moving? I mean, I know how you do it as a grown man, but when you're a young person, like you say, 24, 25 years old, you know, it's very difficult.
Oh, and it was. It was very difficult. I went through a very public divorce, and so public that they thought it warranted being on the cover of the Baltimore Sunday Sun newspaper.
Right.
There was no book in Barnes & Noble for me to check up on how to navigate it. I didn't know a preacher to call on what to do in that space. There's an old preacher that said to me something that has haunted me. He said, preachers are the last people who believe what they preach.
Ouch.
And so, right.
Ouch.
So, yeah, you ask me, what do I do? It's what would I tell my parishioner to do? You got to pray.
Right.
You got to seek God. You got to trust the Lord. It's easy to say that to other people. But when it's your turn to take that cod liver oil, you got to take 2 teaspoons of it.
Did you truly find it helpful, or was it just anecdotal?
I found it as oxygen because I didn't know what to do or where to go. You have to realize my dad stopped pastoring in 1988.
Okay.
So you got to have in context in 1988, show you how time is flying. We didn't even have iPhones.
No, you're right.
Let me go a step further. We were on Motorola 2-way pagers.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
So me trying to explain what a blog is. You're like, is that the Afro? it's a whole nother world on what that is. And so my prayer life really had to be revved and amped up.
Okay. What are some of the things about you that you feel people misunderstand the most?
There's a book I read called The Courage to Be Disliked. And it is a very powerful book because we look at people differently in death than we do in life. The reality is 3 weeks ago, the whole nation honored and quoted Dr. King. When he died in 1968, it was his lowest approval rating.
Okay.
Split the Baptist Convention.
Right.
Anybody who has done something significant in history did not do so on the wave of popularity. You know, nobody wants to remember that when Barack Obama first announced John Lewis, Andy Young, Jesse Jackson, none of them endorsed him.
You know what? I didn't even know that.
Yeah, so let's not rewrite history on the power. You know, if words of affirmation are your love language and you want to be a history maker, you ain't going to make it. you're gonna have to find another way to stick with your convictions. I heard my dad say something that is so riveting. He said he is so glad Barack Obama was not his member.
Really?
Yeah, he said, because he would have told him not to run.
Wow.
that there's no way that he would have made it.
Wow.
You know what I mean? So you have to really stick hold to your convictions and really be clear on what it is that God has told you to do.
Wow. Well, let me ask you this question, Jamal. It seems that money and the church have become a real item for scrutiny. Yeah. Pastors making money, driving nice cars, having better homes. Do you see that there's a conflict of interest in that? Do you think, how do you feel about it?
There's a gross misinterpretation.
Okay.
76% to 84% of pastors are bivocational.
Okay.
The overwhelming majority of churches in America are 50 members or less.
Okay.
So people take Greenleaf and assume everybody is balling out of control. You know what I mean? And that's not the case. You got pastors right now stressed out having to decide, do I pay the drummer or do we print bulletins? You know what I mean?
Right.
They're really in that kind of struggle. But we look at the mega churches, which are usually no more than 3 or 4 in a city, and forget that 2,000 other churches whose pastor's name you don't even know. Who's, you know, the overwhelming majority of the first ladies don't have on no red bottom shoes.
Right.
And so I think that you got to get out of who you are watching on TV and look at those who are really making an impact. I often tell young preachers, don't forget that Martin Luther King Jr. never pastored a church over 400 people. He was never a mega pastor.
Huh. Okay.
He never had the largest church in town. But made a significant impact. Size does not always equate to significance. Sometimes it is those community pastors who are championing the cause much larger than the pastor who has the crowd.
And that was my next point, my last one. As the pastor of what's considered, I guess, a mega church, do you feel that you can pastor to people the same way that you could if it were small? I mean, do you still feel as close to people? You know, when you get to a point where people are DMing you as opposed to coming up and shaking your hand, do you feel that you will have the same effectiveness on them as that corner pastor?
Yeah, well, I still take small church sensibilities with me to a mega church. So every Sunday, I still stand at the door and shake people's hands.
There you go.
Yeah, I still do all the baptisms.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So I think that my old publicist out of Baltimore, Nicole Kirby, used to say, you have to be high tech and high touch. And I endeavor to do that.
Well, thus smelling like the sheep, right?
That's right. That's right. Yes, sir.
All
day long.
Well, listen, Jamal, it's been a great half hour, man. I really appreciate you coming on. And where can people stream you?
Yes. So you can go to all streaming platforms, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Jamal H. Bryant, YouTube, Jamal Bryant, or New Birth. If there's no blue check, then that is not me. But ask that you go to the verified account and please follow us.
Awesome. Dr. Jamal Bryant, thanks for being here on 1500 with me today. And hope to talk to you soon later, Jamal. Appreciate you, brother.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Bye-bye. High tech and high touch. I like that. I think I'm going to try to be that myself. All right, I know you hear the music. It can only mean one thing. That is the Petty. He is in the building. Well, he's not actually in the building, but, you know, he's on the show. Let's give him a call, see what he's talking about for this Super Bowl Sunday, see what his prediction is, or if it is the same as it was last week. Let's give the Petty a call.
Brother B, good morning to you. Happy Super Bowl Sunday.
Yes, indeed it is. How you doing this morning, Petty?
I'm doing just great, waiting for today's festivities to begin. We have the final two. I mean, from what I understand, there's a bunch of pigeons that's flown into the desert to meet those guys from Arrowhead. I'm talking about those Philadelphia Eagles, the number one team in all of the NFL, and the Kansas City Chiefs.
You know what, man? Finally, we got a number one team from the AFC and the number one team from the NFC. The best two teams of the divisions playing in the Super Bowl.
I love it. I love it.
Quarterback by two black quarterbacks.
Well, I heard a little something. It was kind of funny because we're talking about Jalen Hurts is definitely a black quarterback. And the jury is kind of still out on Patrick Mahomes. They said, there's a little cream in that coffee, Brother B. So, I don't know. Two black quarterbacks. Let's just say two black quarterbacks because it is Black History Month.
Hey, let me ask you a question. Did you watch the Super Bowl festivities last weekend, last Saturday? Did you see the flag football, the Pro Bowl flag football game?
I couldn't watch it. I just couldn't. I tried to watch it. I'm telling you, the Pro Bowl game is not what I remember it to be. It's a farce to me. I mean, it's a waste of time. It's a waste of money. I mean, the people want to go out to the Allegiant Stadium in Vegas and have a good time. I'm not going to, you know, say anything bad about them, but give me the games that used to be in Hawaii. I used to love that.
Well, I watched
it. I'm talking about real Pro Bowl games.
I watched it with your dad, and he and I was sitting there blown away by how many people were actually. The stadium was completely full to see a flag football game. Like, I was blown.
Well, let me tell you something, Brother B. I've been out to Vegas. I've seen the stadium. If I would have been in Vegas, I probably would have attended myself because the stadium is gorgeous.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It's a must-see place. I'm waiting to go to a game out there, and it's a beautiful stadium. So I can kind of understand them paying the price of those tickets to go see a flag football game.
And they had the skills competition, but they didn't have the NFL's fastest man competition, which I was surprised about.
Yeah, that's a big disappointment because there are some speedsters. But I'll tell you this much, if it would have been me, I would put my money on Tyreek Hill.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I don't think there's anyone out there faster than him in the NFL.
Yeah, you might be right.
I could be wrong, but I think he's the fastest man in the NFL. And they probably didn't have the competition. They figured, well, he's going to win anyway.
Right.
So why haven't?
Right. So what do you think, man? Who's going to win this game?
Well, you know what? I was calling this the Andy Reid Bowl because Andy Reid did coach both of the teams. He coached the Eagles for 14 years. He's been out in KC for 10 years. And he's done a good job with both teams. I mean, you know, you got to give it to him. He's probably one of the better coaches out there. He was able to change with the times as far as the type of quarterbacks that he's had. And, you know, he's just a good coach. And to be able to see that, and not to mention, some people call it the Kelce Bowl.
Yeah.
You have two brothers, Jason Kelce and Travis Kelce. And, you know, that's a story within itself also. And then, of course, the MVP voting where Patrick Mahomes won and Jalen Hurts came in second.
Right.
Now, here's a little tidbit for you, Brother B.
Okay.
The NFL MVP quarterback has been 0-8 in the Super Bowl.
Really?
The last quarterback to win MVP and win the Super Bowl was back in 1999, and that was Kurt Warner. So, if that trend continues, put your money on the Eagles. Bet the house, the car, the farm, the kids, college tuition. Put it on the Eagles.
Yeah,
that's
but
not what I'm telling you to do, but, you know, that's what's been happening lately.
You said last week that you were going with the Eagles anyway, right?
Well, you know, when I look at the team and I take it apart and put it back together and turn it upside down and turn it sideways, I'm looking at the roster man for man, position for position. And, you know, I honestly believe that the Eagles are a better team.
Okay.
I think the Chiefs have the better quarterback. But I think the Eagles and their defense, and you know what they say, defense wins championships. So I'm going to make this short and sweet. I'm going to take those pigeons from Philly, not because I live in the area, because of what I see. I'm going to take those pigeons to beat the old coach that used to be here in Philly, Andy Reid. And here's a tidbit for you. I think I might have to score. I'm going with 38-34. Give it to those Pigeons, those Philadelphia Eagles.
That's a high-scoring game for two defensive teams.
Well, you can't deny that offenses are high-powered as well. I mean, they're going to light it up. You know, it's going to be, you know what? I think the deciding factor will be the turnovers. Who will not make turnovers? Whoever can keep the least amount of turnovers, they will be the winners.
You know, my point is that, like, I don't think, I like the Eagles. I want Jalen Hurts to win the Super Bowl. I mean, I really, really want him to do that. But I don't know if the Eagles, as good as their defense is, has played a team this year that's as fast as the KC's offense.
And I agree with you 100%, Brother B. And I've said it myself. I said the Eagles have not seen an offense like that really all year long. Some will say their schedule's a little soft. You can say, if you compare it, you look at what KC had to go up against. They went up against Justin Herbert. I shouldn't even say his name because he was not Mr. whatever he was called, Mr. Unlimited. He was very limited. And I'm talking about Russell Wilson.
Right.
And they saw Derek Carr, who I still consider a very good quarterback. And he saw that team, saw those quarterbacks twice a year. So that's six times that Kansas City had to play those type of teams. Not to mention they saw Joe Burrow. So they saw some very good teams. Whereas the Eagles, their schedule outside of Dallas, who did they really play this year?
Right.
You want to say Minnesota? Minnesota was a fraud, and they were exposed in the playoffs. They were just winning by the skin of their teeth every week.
You know, I thought about you last week because I know that last week when I spoke to you, you talked about Derek Carr being a good quarterback. He actually won the skills competition for the he won the skills competition for quarterbacks for the Super Bowl festivities.
So with that being said, Brother B, I'm going to pose this question to you and the people there in Baltimore, those Raven fans. How would they feel about Derek Carr coming to Baltimore?
I like Derek Carr too. I mean, I do. But because we don't have the offensive weapons as far as receivers to throw to, you need somebody that can move like a Lamar. Now, if you got rid of Lamar, you have to stack the receiver core for a quarterback that's a pocket passer like a Derek Carr.
Well, let me play armchair general manager for you for the Baltimore Ravens. You know what? We're going to franchise Lamar. Well, okay, you know what? Let's franchise him, let's sign him, and let's trade him to the Raiders. And from the Raiders, you know what we want from you, Raiders? We want Derek Carr, we want one of your seconds, we want two of your thirds. Now, if you look at that, the Ravens can go get two offensive linemen, sign a nice receiver with one of those picks, trade one of those draft picks and get a receiver, and maybe get a receiver out of college in the third or fourth round.
How old is Derek Carr?
Derek Carr, you know what? He's kind of like on the edge of 30, if not 30. So
okay.
He's still got a lot of miles. He's still got a lot of gas in the tank.
Yeah.
And I like him as a quarterback. It's something about that the Raider coaching, and I just don't understand what's going on out there. You got Davante Adams out there, and I just don't understand it. There were times when the Raiders looked really, really good, and there were times when the Raiders looked really, really bad. But sometimes you need to make a change, and maybe Lamar needs to change from out of Baltimore. Maybe Baltimore needs to change from Lamar. Now,
I don't know, man. The contract extensions apparently are going very well. The talks are going very well.
If the talks are going well and he wants to be here, then that's a good thing for the fans of Baltimore. It might be a good thing for him. But here's the key. You have to get him some weapons to work with, a la what Philadelphia did for Jalen Hurts.
Right, right.
So if you don't have that outside of Mark Andrews, you know, you take away the tight end from Baltimore, that's it.
Yeah, Mark Andrews was talking about taking a pay cut just so that we could keep Lamar here. Did you hear about that?
Well, yeah, I did hear about that. And that's very noble of him. But see, then again, Lamar can't be greedy because guess what? If you want too much money, there's nothing left in the pot to bring in.
Very true.
A free agent receiver.
Very
receiver.
True. And that's what Jordan knew with the Bulls.
Nobody's going to want to sign here.
That's what Jordan knew with the Bulls, and that's what Brady knew with the Patriots. Both of these superstars were willing to take pay cuts and did take pay cuts for that.
Right. So Lamar's asking price, I mean, the man should get his money. But on the flip side of that, he needs to be smart and say, hey, if I can take a little less than what I really want, maybe I can get some talent here and we can win a championship.
Yeah, but if I'm Lamar, I'm looking at all the other quarterbacks that are being paid more than me who didn't have to do that. Why do I have to be the sacrificial lamb when those guys who don't have my talent didn't have to be that. I'm talking about like, what's his face out of Cleveland?
Deshaun Watson?
Yeah, Watson.
And look at Cleveland.
Yeah, very true.
Look at Cleveland.
But look who's getting paid.
If Lamar wants his money and Baltimore will be a mirror image of Cleveland that's going nowhere, then fine, Lamar, get your money. But just know that if you do make it to the playoffs, you'll be one and done.
Yeah.
Like you've been the last several years. Or you might not make it at all.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
So if you want to talk about those, you know, look at Russell Wilson and look at Denver.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right.
So those are things you have to look at. It's a double-edged sword. Yes, the man should get his money, but you have to look at it from like, well, if I take it all off the table, there's nothing left for them to bring in some talent for.
You're right.
And when was the last star receiver coming out of Baltimore?
Steve Smith, really.
Exactly. And that's been several years.
Yeah, you're right. Before I let you go, man, I got to ask you one more question. What do you think about this whole Brett Favre thing and suing Shannon Sharpe and Pat McAfee?
I just wish Brett Favre would go away. You know, he did some things. He got caught. Now, you know, for him to try to turn things and make it look as though I don't want you guys talking about me and what I've done, I'm going to put something else out there that you guys can talk about. So I'm going to sue Shannon Sharpe and Pat McAfee. And that case will go nowhere.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to go anywhere either. I don't think it's going to work. Yeah.
It is. I tell you what, Brother B, I might have a little something special for you next week, because not only will the USFL be starting soon, but the XFL will be starting.
That's what I'm talking
about. You know what? There is a popular name that's back into the game. He's back to playing professional football. No, he's not back in the NFL. And if you get with me next week, I'm going to drop that name.
Oh, man. You can't be throwing cliffhangers on Super Bowl Sunday.
There you go. There's a cliffhanger for you, Brother B. Listen, enjoy the game.
Oh, come on.
I hate to say it because I'm a big, big Niner fan. But because I love the NFC, I'm going to say it. Go Birds, and I'm not talking about those bum bird Ravens. I'm talking about those Philadelphia Eagles. Happy Sunday,
man,
to you, Brother B. I gotta go.
All right, peace, brother. All right, well, there's the Petty. You heard him. He's taking those Eagles 38-34 over the KC Chiefs. And listen, I am not the Petty. I went against him 2 weeks ago in the playoff games, and I was wrong in both games. So I'm going to go with him on this pick. Hopefully, I'll put some cha-ching in my pocket. Hopefully, you'll put some cha-ching in yours by following his word. And also, listen, the XFL and the USFL are coming up just like he said, and I can't wait for him to get started on those. But in the meantime, this hour has gone by like it always has, incredibly fast. And again, it's only because I like doing what I do. So this is the fastest hour of my week, and I appreciate you being here. I appreciate Dr. Jamal Bryant being with me today. I hope you enjoyed that segment. And please enjoy the Super Bowl this evening, people. But remember, be responsible. Be responsible in your partying. That means do not drink and drive. I am not a drinker. I never have been. But I have suffered loss because of a drunk driver, and I don't want anyone to suffer that as well. I don't want you to go out and ruin your life by getting behind the wheel when you're nice. It's just not worth it. So please, be responsible. Take care of your friends. Take care of yourself. Enjoy the game, people. Please remember, it is a historic moment. We've got two young black men starting as quarterbacks in the Super Bowl in the NFL. It's never happened before. And don't forget to get at me on IG at On with Brian Pettaway. Tell me what you thought about today's show. Tell me how you feel about Dr. Jamal Bryant. Whatever. Just give me some feedback. It really helps me. It helps the show grow. And I love to hear from you. But enjoy your Sunday, people. Sit back and enjoy. Watch the game. Do nothing. And remember, tomorrow morning, wake up, conquer the world. Because the best thing about doing nothing, like I always say, is you can quit whenever you want. I got to go. I got to prep. I got to get ready to watch the Super Bowl tonight myself. Peace.